It is 2 o'clock here on the West Coast, no matter where you're listening, but right now it is time for your weekly appointment with Elizabeth Barrett, the Reluctant Therapist. Good afternoon, and what is on your mind today, Elizabeth?
Brad, and what is on my mind is a theme that has been coming up pretty regularly over the last week. It's always different themes. I love when there are strands of things that kind of run through my mind and then come together by Tuesday to be some sort of topic for us to share on the show. And this week's theme seems to be revolving around this idea of the meaning of life, and not the meaning of life as far as what we do for a career or our religious connections or the spiritual piece of it, but really the meaning of life about whether or not the goal of life should be to live forever or as long as possible, or if the goal of life is to live meaningfully for a limited period of time. And there are three different reasons why this has been coming up for me this week. One is that this is the time of the quarter that my students read Ishmael by Daniel Quinn and Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. And so every quarter I get to revisit these books. And then it's always interesting when we have our group discussions, our class discussions, to see what part of the books kind of stand out for my students. And if you haven't read Ishmael by Daniel Quinn or Man's Search for Meaning, I highly recommend reading both of them. They are compelling. And also they kind of bring to light different philosophies about kind of what we're doing here, or what the meaning of life is all about. Ishmael from the perspective of a telepathic gorilla. And I tell my students every quarter, you can't get hung up on that piece of it. But it's really important that this story is told through the lens of someone who is not a human being. So you have to let that go and just stay with the story. And then the other, Man's Search for Meaning, follows Viktor Frankl's experience in the concentration camps during World War II and his experiences and how those experiences then led him after the war to create logotherapy, which was his existentially based psychotherapy that was focused on the importance of man having a why for life in order for life to be meaningful or worth living. Both are interesting reads. And so we had our class discussions about Man's Search for Meaning and Ishmael. And then also over the course of last week, I've come across four articles just in the New York Times alone that were focused on extending life or longevity science, or the desire to be immortal and live forever. And I found it interesting that these articles seem to have been popping up right at this moment. And I don't know why there's the confluence of that, unless you look at one of the articles that focuses on the rich and powerful and their desire and the efforts and billions of dollars that they're putting into rejuvenation science, longevity science, in order to be able to be immortal and live forever. One of the articles talks about Xi and Putin being caught on a hot mic chatting about their desires to live forever and to be immortal and to have power forever, and kind of that stunning realization of, if we have this capacity and ability to extend people's lives for decades, if not for eternity, do we want to have a forever person in power? That's kind of circulating all in this idea. And then the other piece was a conversation that I had with a friend of mine who's an MD, and something that he's been really grappling with. And we kind of went on a deep dive into the conversation this weekend. And I'm paraphrasing what he said, which was, one of the things that I grapple with is that my job, what I have taken this oath to do, or this, you know, vocation, is that I am here to patch people up, bring them back to health, to save lives. And yet quite often, especially in elderly patients, I get them back to some level of functioning or health, only to know that inevitably they come back and will die probably of something far worse than the thing that I have been treating them for. And that felt really heavy. It's like, wow, you know, that must be really difficult. He goes, yeah, it's this really conflicting feeling all the time because I feel compelled to want to use my knowledge and the things that I have in front of me to be able to extend life and to save people and to bring them, you know, back to their families. But I grapple with the quality of life issue. I grapple with the knowledge that the extension of life could lead to greater suffering down the road. And is that what my job is about? And so I thought, what better place to bring all these thoughts than to hear on a Tuesday afternoon and to see what you think about these ideas of longevity or the thought that we might be able to live forever or to be immortal or to extend lives. And I'm thinking about the complexities and the contradictions that are involved in these discussions about extending life, because there are many implications. There are moral implications to extending life. There's the physical implications about quality of life. You know, how will we feel? I think for me, part of it is, how would I feel when I'm 110, even if I've had rejuvenation? Because there are days when I feel 110, and I don't know if I want to keep going for another 40 years. So there's the moral aspect, the physical aspect, there's the spiritual aspect in that, are we here on earth to live forever? Is this the end goal, the Eden? I don't know. There's the economic piece of the discussion, because one of the things that's come up in the conversation about the challenge for my students who are getting ready to graduate and go off into the world is that there are not the jobs to support these incoming new hires into the workforce. And part of the reason, not only is it layoffs and the change in how work is being done and AI, that's really not the big part of it. Part of it is that people are working later and later into their lives. And so when you have an aging workforce, people aren't moving out of jobs, then that prevents new jobs from coming forward or for younger, everyone to move up, right? There's no opportunity for anyone to move up the ladder, up the chain. And so if you're going to live to be 140, are you going to work for 100 of those years? And then what do we do with our emerging workforce? And that's a whole nother show, because what does work look like in the next 20, 30 years with the change? But we'll save that for another day. Then there's the practical part of this story, the practical lens of, again, population and sustainability and resources for having this many people continuing to live forever. So there's where my brain is. You can tell that my wheels are churning through all of these thoughts, because there's a lot to it, and I want to make sure that I'm able to kind of express what I'm thinking and then also encourage you to call in and express what you're thinking as well. This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and our number is 805-781-3875. You can also find me after the show by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can also send me a message through Facebook or Instagram. I don't post often, but I do get the messages if you send them to me that way. If you'd like to listen to previous shows, you can visit us at kcbx.org under the News Talk tab, or you can podcast our show by visiting wherever it is you get your podcasts, NPR podcasts, Apple podcasts, I'm on Spotify, and just search for A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Please leave a review, and then other people can find us as well, and you can listen at your convenience. So that's where we are today. We're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to continue organizing my thoughts, and I hope you'll organize yours as well. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Help me through the night. World turning.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And our number to be part of the conversation is 805-781-3875. I know it's kind of scary to call, but Brad and my intern Jackie are both here, and they love taking phone calls. And they'll also be happy to read any questions or comments that you have if you don't want to go on the air. So I always want to leave that as an option. And I know that Jackie really likes having an opportunity to be on the air. All right. I'm going to start my pitch or my thoughts talking about Ishmael, because that's really fresh in my mind, Ishmael by Daniel Quim. And again, if you haven't read it, the basic idea behind it is how we found ourselves as a culture destroying the planet over and over again. Every iteration of civilization has somehow destroyed where it's living, and then a new civilization emerges and then somehow destroys the civilization and has to continue rebuilding. But as humans on the planet, we have not found a way to live that's sustainable. But that's not always been the way. According to Ishmael, there was a time for billions of years that there were levers, and those were the human beings that lived within the laws of nature, the laws of competition, limited competition, as just part of the ecology of the planet. And at some point, right around the time of the beginning of agriculture, a new type of human being kind of stepped up, and those were the takers. And they were the ones who felt that they were exempt from the law of limited competition or the laws of nature, or that they were even part of the ecology of the planet. The idea of the takers was that the planet was actually created for them, and they were here to dominate and control the planet and to utilize the resources as they saw fit. And at that time, things split. And we saw this change in how human beings interact with the planet. And then much to our lack of ability to sustain or find a way to sustain or live within the laws of nature, we've just continued down this path of some levels of extinction. And according to Quinn and other authors, we're living in what they call the sixth extinction. It's not a super cheery book, but it offers this kind of vision of how we got into trouble and some ideas of how we might get out of trouble. And one of them is that we need to humbly retake our place within the laws of nature. We are not exempt from the laws of nature. Quinn calls it actually the law of limited competition. And this laws of life or limited competition are all the ecological principles that actually allowed this community of life to survive and thrive for billions of years. And the core of this idea is that every species is a part of the community and must follow these specific rules to maintain balance. The first one is do not exterminate your competition for food, which means you can defend your area for your food, but you cannot eliminate everyone who is competing for the same food source just to have them dead. Number two, do not destroy your competitor's food supply. You can take what you need, but knowing that other species also utilize the same food supply, you can't destroy it, which would then lead to the demise of your competitor. And then do not deny access to food to others. And the idea is you cannot claim all of the earth as your domain, that it is for all people. And you can see these played out not just in how we've treated the animal species on the planet, but how we treat other countries and how we treat other people within our own country. We live flagrantly outside of the rules of limited competition. Part of it, again, at that moment of agriculture, was the moment that someone figured out they could lock up food and then charge people for it, and that changed all the dynamic. But ideally, diversity is the key to the survival of humans, and it's the part that human beings don't get, that there's no exceptions for human beings, that all species are being ruled by the same laws. And the most difficult part of this concept or this story, these stories for my students, is this, that we live in this time that there's an ethic of wanting to keep people alive for as long as possible, hence my conversation with my MD friend, that that's part of our ethos, our way as human beings, that we don't allow people to die. We want to intervene. We want to feed populations. We want to make sure we can extend life. But that in to itself, according to the laws of limited competition in nature, to live within the law of nature means that you need to accept the inevitability of death, and that we are not the most important species. And to maintain planetary survival, we have to allow death to occur to all species. One of the lines that Quinn talks about is that the gods determined that one day it would be the elk's day and one day it would be the puma's day. But they could not determine, you know, that supply and demand or how death would play out. And the students really get caught up at that. Once we start to have that competition, they think, oh, no, I could never abide by this idea that we would just let people die if we could possibly keep them alive. And so our conversations kind of screech to a halt until they, you know, allow themselves to step back a little and talk about what's the alternative. And so here's the other part of my thoughts. The alternative that we're talking about is this longevity science and all the money that's going into creating these ways to extend life. One of the other articles was about the rich and powerful and what if they could live forever and what pushes it. And you talk about Peter Thiel and Sam Altman and Brian Johnson and their efforts to make sure they could live forever. But they're not talking about efforts to create a way for all people to live forever. It's so they, as the rich and powerful, which they deem to be the most important people on the planet, would be able to live forever. And so now you'd create this interesting split of class of people that the rich and powerful, who, again, if you talk to Ishmael and Daniel Quinn, is part of that mother culture that says your worth is determined by the amount of money and power you have on the planet. That is the myth that we've all been chasing or been told to chase for 1,000 years. And so this longevity science is just one more iteration of it. It's beyond having power and money, but it's also the capacity to live forever and maybe rule forever. And so what does that look like? And what does that look like for the common person? And then if, as a common person, you could live forever, would you? Because then we go back to that sense that I have that there are ethical and moral and maybe even spiritual reasons why the lifetime of a human being is limited. Even though, again, I think of the complexities and contradictions, even though 70 years ago, you know, the life expectancy was in the 60s and now it's at 80. And so there's this almost natural, with the boost of science or medicine, that people are already living longer in some way. But should there be a limit of that? I don't know. If you're just tuning in, I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875 to be part of the conversation. And I'm curious about the importance of longevity. And is our life mostly about the longevity, or is it about the meaningfulness? Because that's another piece that I sit with often, is this sense that I have of wanting to be a contributor, that while I'm here, I should be contributing, that I should be doing something to better the lives of people in the ways that I can, whether it's my family or friends or my community in general. I don't have this sense that I'm responsible for the entire world. I think sometimes that overwhelms people who are givers by nature, that they feel overwhelmed by all of the need everywhere on the planet, and that taxes them. I don't have that. But I definitely have this sense that while I'm here, it is my moral and ethical responsibility to be bettering the lives of or improving the lives of others. And I wonder if part of this desire, and again, I don't want to yuck the yum of people who say, I just want to live forever, because everyone gets to make their own decisions. Just from my perspective, if I'm not being productive or contributing, I don't really sure why I'm still here utilizing resources. But I imagine for some people, Thiel and Altman and Johnson would definitely be examples, that there's that ego part that if I can possibly stay alive, then that's my right as a human to utilize all those resources to stay as alive for as long as I can. And I don't have to contribute or give back or pay taxes because I am exempt from all those things because of the power and wealth that I have. And you can step back and see the hubris in that. But then I would argue at the same time, Daniel Quinn would say, they're just living. They are the success stories of a cultural narrative about what it is to be a human being. They're the winners because we've all agreed to this cultural story, this mother culture that says we're about competition and about capitalism and about forward progression. And he who has the gold makes the rules. We all live that. We're captives of that story. So maybe at the end of the day, they're just upping the success that they have as members of the community. Those are my thoughts. Are you?
We were just discussing somebody who had a question offline and was trying to debrief from that comment. But
I was seeing someone was there, and I was hoping they were going to hop on the air with me.
I think they're going to send you an email, but we had to work on the spelling of reluctant and therapist for about 5 minutes.
I apologize for that. That is a terrible, terrible email address.
It happens.
I even spell it incorrectly.
So my apologies, Elizabeth, when we were keeping our eye off the ball.
No,
that moment.
I appreciate it.
What was your jumping off point back to me here?
I was just kind of ending with my thoughts and looking at you and Jackie and thinking, what are your first thoughts on this?
Jackie, what do you think? Your first thoughts about the possibility
of Jackie is one of my students at Cal Poly. So we're getting a student perspective.
The first thought that comes to my head is why you would want, like, what purpose? I don't know. Like, what would be your purpose in living forever, I guess, is the first thing that pops into my head. Because in my brain, it would be for your own self-fulfillment. And so that's kind of the question that I have.
Well, do you want to live forever?
No.
And
I don't think I would want to live forever. I think I appreciate... That's kind of like what the beautiful thing about life is, I guess, is that it's not forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we all obviously are aware of that. And that's how that you are able to like cherish the moments that are special,
mm-hmm.
knowing that like those moments are finite and they're not. They're not going to happen all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it makes us appreciate our relationships like incredibly, like in on such a deeper level, and also our health. So no, I don't think I would want to live forever.
Did you read Ishmael?
I did. Okay. I didn't read A Man's Search for Meaning.
I thought you read Ishmael. And so what about the piece, and if we are going to accept that death is inevitable, that we should not work as hard to keep people alive as long as possible?
I thought a lot about that when I read it. And I think what I would take away from that is kind of like when I think about being to the point where I'm on life support or I like just know that I couldn't have like I have the inability to live my life in a way that I can thrive and be around my loved ones. I don't think that I would want to, I don't know.
I know it's again.
Have,
I think
like
you grapple,
life sustaining.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think you grapple with it the way a lot of people do, and you know, it made me think about when during COVID I binge watched The Good Life, and I don't know if you saw that series. And again, I also recommend it if you haven't seen it. And then now I'm in a bad way because if you haven't seen it, I don't want to tell you the end of it because it does wrap up so beautifully. But it does have a piece of the idea of immortality, and what that looks like to live forever. And I think you made a really great point, Jackie, which is part of the beauty or the tenderness of life is that we know that it's finite, and that ability to really, you know, milk the juice from it or to get the most from life feels so important. And that's a bit of the theme of that as well.
Yeah, I think also it's like in my 20s. And so these are questions that obviously I've thought about, but not as frequently, I guess, as if I wondered if I was older. And so then I also think that that means that I could take a lot of moments for granted. But as I do get older, I like think about the fact that like I need to cherish these moments of life. You know what I mean? And so
yeah, I do.
If there was the guarantee that I would live forever, I think all of us, I mean, I don't know. I think society would be, I don't know if that would be the greatest thing.
Right. Because then all of a sudden you're in a place of not really cherishing anything. You can take a lot for granted. I appreciate those thoughts.
Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And our number is 805-781-3875 to be part of the conversation. Bill, how are you today?
I'm good.
Good. I'm glad you called in.
Yeah, I got a little story that your conversation reminded me of.
Okay.
I was in a Qigong class years ago, and there was a 75-year-old lady that was telling a story about her granddaughter. Asked her, "How long are you going to live, Grandma?" And she says, "Well, I don't know. I've got an expiration date on my butt, but I can't read it." Anyway, take it for what it's
worth. I like it.
But we all are going to die, you know? And, you know, take it for what it's worth and go with it while you're still alive.
I think that was Jackie's feeling as well, is that there's a part of the knowing that it's not forever, that we have to laugh at death a little bit and our own mortality to move forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate you calling in.
Goodbye.
Bye. Yeah, I was thinking, you know, again, the moral, ethical, political, spiritual, economic piece of extending life. I wonder in some ways that if we have almost extended it too much at this moment. But then I think about, you know, my friends' parents, my own parents who are living into their 80s, and many of my friends' parents are well into their 90s already. And you know, are the 90s the new 70s? Or I grapple a lot with those things as well. But this idea, I guess, for me, the overarching piece is our responsibility as just one of the species on the planet. And we had Earth Day, you know, last week, and the kind of reminder that we are not caretakers of the environment. Our job is not to be tenders to the Earth. We are just one of the many species on the planet that is part of the ecological diversity. And humans do have an important part in the ecological diversity. But once the human beings stepped out and started to prevent themselves from having to live with the laws of nature, things got out of balance. And so this idea that somehow we own the Earth or dominate the planet and we need to take care of it is actually counter to what we should be thinking about, which is what is our role and position on the planet. And even if we have all the knowledge and information to be able to extend life and know all things, is that what we should be doing? 805-781-3875 is our number. And hey, Bruce, thanks for calling in.
Hi.
How are you today?
So, good. So, in my head, a lot of this started with Christianity, you know. In my head, you know, man wrote the Bible and man made man lord over the earth, which is pretty arrogant of us. And then we seem to rationalize things like, oh, that was God's will, you know. So we'll extend our lives at the, you know, detriment of other life forms on the earth. And we think that, you know, it would be interesting to me if the other animals develop language, you know, develop the ability to have a Bible, to have a, you know, a sacred book, something like that. And I think that, I don't know, to me, that's what kind of made our mindset, you know, for a lot of, you know, Westerners.
It's interesting you said it, because have you read Ishmael by Daniel Quinn?
No, I have not.
Well, I think along the line that you're talking about, it all kind of comes through that story and how we got into trouble in the way that we are.
Yeah, we just, we just think we're the big dog on the planet, and we don't realize that if you look at Cannery Row, you know, when they got rid of all of the, what were the sardines up mm-hmm. in Monterey Bay,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, they just fished them out.
Mm-hmm.
And it, I don't know, we just, our need for more and more and more and more, it just depletes the planet. I don't see any other way that I think there's just going to be a mass die-off of humans. At a point.
That sixth extinction. Well, and Ishmael yeah. is narrated through the lens of a telepathic gorilla. So kind of your idea of I wish we could hear what was being said by their species. That's the lens through which Quinn writes the book. And I think it's important in the telling from the lens of another species. And also I think about all the different ways that mankind has wiped out species, you know, ruined, stepped out of the law of competition. And I watched the documentary special by Ken Burns about the buffalo, the bison, mm-hmm. and how, you know, just for sport, shooting at them out of trains that were going through planes just leaving there. It's so obscene to me that human beings would on any level think that was okay.
Yeah, burn the food source, right?
Exactly.
To wipe out a whole, you know, civilization of people mm-hmm. rather than learn from them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just gotten, I don't know, you know how hand in hand religion and politics is right now.
Yeah.
And so it's to me, they've just opened up a can of like, we can do whatever we want now mm-hmm. for the greater good of us, you know, being self-serving now is very popular.
Yes. A lot of the longevity science is about self-serving for the individual to live forever as well.
Yeah, you're familiar with Charles Bukowski?
Not enough to speak intelligently.
So he was in an interview and someone, he was nearing, you know, 70s and talking about end of life. And he basically said, I'm not afraid of death. He said, because life just keeps repeating itself.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, so you get to the point where you're like, okay, I've seen this before. I've been here before. I've done this before. This is just the 30th or 40th time I've went through this loop mm-hmm. emotionally, mentally, physically of this routine that us human beings do.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I don't want to go through it another 30 times. I'm good.
Mm. I'm
ready. I'm happy, you know, because I've realized that it's just going to be a rerun of what I've been through already.
Yeah. So my
and
last...
That's kind of how...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, you know, I've met some people like, I'm going to live to be 105. And in my head, I'm like, why?
Mm.
You know, I mean, we all think that we are going to have the same mental acuity, whatever you'd call it, and, mm-hmm. and the same physical ability that we do now. We project old age, like I'm going to be the same guy I am right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can do 20, 30, 50 push-ups. You know, I can walk 3 miles a day. I'm going to be that. And you don't realize the reality is like 1% of us actually have their act together when they're that old.
Yeah.
You know, the rest of us are just staring off.
Yeah. Yeah, that was going to be my question. So I appreciate your giving me your thoughts on that too. On this, it sounds like you don't want to join the longevity science and live forever.
No. when I get to the point where I'm just not all there, then I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah, there's I'm trying to achieve as much as I can. I'm 64. I'm trying to achieve as much as I can. I'm trying to scratch everything off the cliche bucket list,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to – I want to be in my 70s if I make it and just not ever have to say I wish I'd tried that.
I've tried
and failed at many things,
mm-hmm.
but you know, I learn from it every time.
I appreciate that. Bruce, thank you for taking the time to call in. I appreciate your insights.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. The topic today is the ethics, moral, physical, spiritual, of being able to live forever. And if you had the opportunity to have natural rejuvenation or cellular rejuvenation to live on indefinitely, would you take that opportunity? Is that something you'd be interested in? Or do we have a moral responsibility as just part of the species of the planet to live our life and leave so that the diversity and balance of the planet can continue? We're going to take a quick break and come back and continue our conversation and take your phone calls right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Sunrise, another page, another chance to walk my way, road split wide like river flow. Left or right, only Jah knows. Mama said, mind your step. Every seed is a promise kept. What you plant is what you eat. Truth don't dance on crooked feet. No chain on my will, no gun to my head. Still I'm answerable for every word I say. That's the meaning of life, my brethren. The choices that you make. You're free to walk any road, but you can't dodge what you create.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number to be part of the conversation is 805-781-3875. And Carol, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Thank you. As long as you were talking about Ishmael, mm-hmm. I wanted to recommend, I'm a lifelong bookseller, so I can't resist mentioning a book that would illustrate the Ishmael book. It's called Old Turtle.
Oh, yes.
Do you know that book?
I do. Gosh, I haven't read it since my kids were little.
I know, but it's by Douglas Wood, and the illustrations are absolutely spectacular. And it talks right exactly what you're talking about today. And the other one I wanted to mention, if it's all right, mm-hmm. is a book called Say Yes to Life, Despite of Everything.
Hmm.
And it's Viktor Frankl's son who published it, and Daniel Goleman wrote the foreword. And we're living in such odd times of discordance and terrible times, I think. I'm 84, so I've lived a long time, and I've never seen it like this. But anyway, the foreword is by Daniel Goleman, and Yes to Life in Spite of Everything. We all need to read that because we're so involved in the discord that this could inspire. This inspired me, and I'm 84, and I can't help but recommending Old Turtle because it is a spectacular illustration of Quinn's novel.
You said that Viktor Frankl's son wrote the foreword. Did he write the book, or where did this?
No.
No.
I know. It's confusing. Viktor Frankl published an article that Viktor Frankl, it's his son, who is also Viktor Frankl.
Oh, okay.
He published this book. He felt it was time. Mm-hmm. And the introduction by Daniel Goleman, who is spectacular on his own. But Yes to Life in Spite of Everything seems to hit the nail on the head right now
for me
and for lots of us.
Carol, I appreciate that. I'm going to actually recommend it to my students because a lot of times after they read Ishmael and Mansur's reading, they feel a little overwhelmed. So this might be a nice add-on for all of them. So thank you.
You're certainly welcome. I've been a lifelong bookseller both in Southern California and here. And Man's Search for Meaning is one of the books that all of us recommend to students who are searching.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love that book and always have. And then this Old Turtle is I love to hand sell it to people because it's so beautifully done and so thoughtful and a minimal amount of words.
I love that. Well, and I'm going to share it again with my grandchildren now. It's another generation. So
There you go.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Pass it on.
I will. Right. I will. Enjoy your day.
Thanks. You too. Bye-bye.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And Chris, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
I want to tell you, I pretty much agree with Bruce, your caller Bruce, what he said. You know, why would you want to live that long? I mean, I used to be in my 20s and 30s and 40s, I'll live to be 150 years old. And wasn't well thought out because now that I'm 67, I realize, well, our bodies and our minds decline. And I guess I just want to get the best out of myself, my body, my life, my family while I can. But I don't know what I would do anyway. What would you do when you're, if you're 120 years old and you've seen everything and heard everything? I mean, I don't know.
But if, again, the idea of the longevity science, the natural rejuvenation, the work that scientists are doing, if you could have, you know, Peter Thiel talks about getting blood transfusions of, you know, young cells. If you could have the health of yourself at a younger age, would there be motivation? I mean, do you feel any moral responsibility to end your time on the planet? Or if given the opportunity to rejuvenate your cells and go on forever, would you?
Oh gosh. This species uses up so much more resources and energy, and it just doesn't make any sense to live any longer than we already have artificially extended lifetimes as living in the Western culture. So, no, I think we need to be done when we're done. Be done by your 80s or 90s.
Mm, yeah. And interesting, 80s or 90s, because it was, you know, 40s, 50s, and 60s for hundreds and hundreds of years. So I think in some way we're upping our own idea of what a good life ending time is. That's interesting.
Oh, yeah. You're right. That's true. I hope my buddy Stan's listening because I told him he needs to call in today. I think he'd have an interesting perspective on this subject.
I hope he does, too. I want to hear from everyone because I think there's a lot to this idea. If we have the science and the ability to extend life, is that innate in mankind, the right to use that knowledge? And some people might argue if we've somehow, as human beings, been able to create and understand the science to extend life, wouldn't that then be our right or responsibility to use that science? I think there might be that argument on the other side.
I don't think so. I think the genie needs to stay in the bottle.
All right. I appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time to call.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye. I am Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. And we're talking about longevity science, this desire, these New York Times articles that came out in the last couple of weeks about the rich and powerful wanting to live forever. And what would be the consequences if they could, if Putin and Xi somehow were able to be immortal and be rulers for another multiple decades? Would that be in our best interest? On the other hand, you know, people like Peter Thiel and Sam Altman, Ryan Johnson are trying to find ways to live forever and cryogenic tanks and cell regeneration. Should they be able to, if they have the science, to live forever? Or do we have a moral obligation as human beings to live within the laws of nature and not dominate the planet as we have? 805-781-3875 is our number. And Mike, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hey, so I was listening to some of your callers, and I agree with most of them. I think the sentiment reflects society's outlook on quantity over quality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The only thing we have control over is the quality of life that we can achieve on the days that we have. And most of us don't have real control over the quantity of life. So I think if we focus our energy in making each day we have better, probably be better for us and society as a whole.
Do you think that there's this desire to quell anxiety about death by, you know, feeling that you can extend your life?
It could be on a surface level, and I can understand that. But at the same time, like I said earlier, I think it's better that we focus on maximizing the days we have and not take them for granted and do the best we can for ourselves and society as a whole. I think that would be a better approach.
Do you think we have a moral obligation to the other species on the planet to not dominate and try to extend lives of many?
I completely do. I think we have a moral responsibility to share the planet with everything that has life, including plants and other living things on Earth.
Yeah. I appreciate you calling in and sharing your thoughts, Mike.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Have a good day. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I think it was Michael, and I misnamed him, and I feel bad if I did. But, Michael, thank you for calling in. I appreciate you. We're talking about longevity and life, and this other piece, too, that, again, everyone seems to dance around, and I think it's the hardest piece. And as I said at the top of the show, my friend who's a doctor talked about how he grapples with this knowledge of knowing how to kind of patch people together or extend their life or, you know, keep them going, but only to, from his experience, end up coming back and oftentimes dying from something that was far worse than the thing he originally helped them overcome. And he grapples with that ethical or moral feeling of, you know, am I here just to extend life no matter what? Should we be doing that? And then the other piece that my students grapple with every quarter is that if we say yes, we're going to live within the laws of nature, that humans are not exempt, that death is inevitable and we need to just accept it as it comes, are we able as a society to say we're not going to use life-extending treatments and healthcare to keep people alive or to feed those who are starving to keep people alive, because human beings aren't necessarily or not the most important species? Those are still the things that we grapple with. 805-781-3875 is our number. And Rich, are you there?
Yeah, hi. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Well, I've read both those books, and particularly Viktor Frankl's book has made a great, made my life better. Mm. But I wanted to talk about the morality of extending your life. And first of all, backing up, the planet needs to be in balance in general. And that doesn't only have to do with extending your life. It has to do with not creating too many new lives. Mm-hmm. And because with science, let's say we're curing cancer in a 45-year-old. Mm-hmm. That's maybe benefiting the 45-year-old, but it's going to benefit older people who might have the same cancer. So they're going to live longer. And that's just a natural part of kind of the general science that we're doing to keep people healthy while they're in their prime even. Mm-hmm. So I think we're missing part of the puzzle in not creating so many people. And that's the crux of my thought there.
Well, it's interesting because I interviewed Daniel Quinn years ago. And he was working on a book at the time. I don't think he finished it. But in his book, his proposal was that there is like a cutoff date that everyone can live and get as much medical care as necessary up until, I think he said, 70. And then after that, you just die of whatever is going to kill you from that point on. So that way we keep balance in the population.
The problem with that thought, I think it's not a terrible thought, but the problem with that I see is somebody has to decide what that date is.
That was part of the story.
By evolution, that date is going to change. And I don't know who I want to put the power of that choice, whose hands I want to put that in.
That was it. That was the story, was about that committee of people who would make those decisions.
Yeah. And I think generally the story that I hear from people about dying is, I want to live as long as I can, as long as I'm healthy. Mm-hmm, that's always the caveat, as long as I'm healthy. Mm-hmm. And the other end of that, because my wife and I talk about ending our lives if we got to a point where we aren't going to die, but we have no purpose here on life. And one of the problems with that, because we could do it ourselves, given the opportunity, but you have to like choose, almost like what you're saying about that book about the committee. Mm-hmm. You have to decide to do that at some point prior to when it's actually happening, because when you get to that point and that's happening, you don't necessarily have the ability to complete that. So it could be you have a terminal illness and you have to go, I think I've got eight more months, so I need to do it now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is a much tougher decision than saying, oh yeah, when I'm at that point, somebody take me out.
Right, right. That is the challenge. And because my parents and I have had the same conversation, and I said, well, do I get to decide when I think you're done? Or or do you still have a say at that point? So that
yeah.
It's dark yeah. humor there, but I think that is yeah. a conversation a lot of people are having.
Yeah, and then you say, because I'm thinking, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to wreck your birthday, but I think we're done.
Yeah, exactly.
Rich, thank you for taking the time to call. I appreciate your thoughts.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye now. 805-781-3875 is our number. And Matt, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, we should just model the society just like Logan's Run.
I don't know that reference.
Oh, the movie Logan's Run. When you're 30,
mm-hmm.
You're basically exterminated.
Oh.
It's a classic old movie. Farrah Fawcett is in it, and it's pretty campy. But no, I do not believe in that
okay.
at all. That's just a bad joke.
More dark humor.
But I do think it's very dark. It is a responsibility not to live on forever, to, you know, as one of your callers made the point of how much we consume, especially in the Western world.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine if somebody like a Trump or a Musk lived for even thousands of years,
mm-hmm.
you know, this planet would probably split in half through destruction.
Mm.
Now there are certain cultures, whatnot, who live more in harmony with the Earth. And I don't think it would be so bad if they lived on longer, but I think for Western society, it would be horrible if people lived on and on and on. And it's, you know, it's also too, we're in our human centric minds and our conception of linear time. Well, we don't know what happens on, you know, on the other side. And, mm-hmm. You know, time is a point on a road that will always have been there. So
yep.
we are immortal in that way.
Yes.
But it's just not the 1 second by another second by another second. But it is, and like other callers have said, just you're here finite and really need to make the best of it, make the best decisions, and, you know, leave behind things that were positive that you contributed. And, you know, people do have a change of heart when they might do horrible things. And as they get near the end, they're like, oh man, I'd better straighten up. So
yes, that redemption. No, I agree. I mean, yeah. there's so many complexities to all of those thoughts, because I like the idea that, you know, when we're here, we've been a part of a unique period of time. So in that way, we are immortal. But then the counter, the thought I had was, then anything other than that is just your ego. And the ego isn't our source, isn't, according to Freud. That's not our soul. You know, our soul is different from that ego. And the ego is the thing that's driving this desire to live forever in ways that I would imagine are spiritually harmful in the long run.
Well, we look at the world like a pinprick in a keyhole,
mm-hmm.
and try to paint the whole scene, and it's just not accurate.
Yeah.
There's a great movie I suggest everybody watch called DMT, The Spirit Molecule.
Okay.
And I'm not suggesting everybody go out and do DMT or ayahuasca.
Okay.
But there's these highly intellectual people that were part of this experiment, and a lot of them are, you know, an atheist sort of vibe. I remember one of the women saying, I sort of wonder if consciousness is really based in the brain.
Mm. Yeah.
Like some sort of an antenna. I remember back in the days when everybody first had the clickers for their car, to turn an on and off the lock. And if your battery is running low, you could put it right under your chin and then it would work.
I love the thoughts. I have to grab these other calls, but Matt, I appreciate you calling in. I'm glad this is a topic that resonates. Thank you. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. But Brad's saying no more calls. This is our last two people. Okay. Anita. Is it Anita? Are you still there? No. Okay. Then our last call goes to G. Grace, are you
Hi.
There?
Hi. Yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to check in because I am a critical care nurse. So I see a lot of how kind of medical technology has already prolonged life.
Yes.
And the impacts that it can have on both the person themselves and then the family that's around them. And it can be really difficult when we are throwing every single medical intervention at somebody. And sometimes the patient themselves really doesn't want to continue because they know that their quality of life is going to decrease. But, you know, it would break their heart to tell their families that.
Yes.
And so we have to navigate a lot of that in that setting. And so that's kind of one thought I had. And then the other thing I wanted to just bring up is that with this longevity science, I don't think that it would ever be available to kind of the common folks.
Agreed, I agree.
You know, with how expensive it is. And also, the folks like Peter Thiel and Sam Altman and that kind of billionaire class are notoriously the worst resource extractors that we have anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so prolonging that, I think, would just have really dire consequences for humans, the planet, the environment, everything.
I agree. I appreciate you kind of wrapping it all together for me today. And I thank you for the hard work that you must do every single day.
Oh, of course. We do it because we love it.
Thank you for calling in. Thank you. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can continue the conversation by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Find me on Instagram, Facebook, listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. Please podcast the show or share the podcast with others so they can leave a review and we can build our community. Until next Tuesday, I just want to remind you a few good reads. According to Carol, Old Turtle for the Kids by Douglas Wood. Say Yes to Life in Spite of Everything by Frankl. Man's Search for Meaning, I Recommend to Everyone by Viktor Frankl. And Ishmael by Daniel Quinn. All of those books have changed my life. I hope they change yours as well. Thank you for tuning in, listening, and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. What I feel.